The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 3, Text 1, given by Dhanavir Das Vanachari on July 15, 1989, in Cockeysville, Maryland.
Sutta said, in the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded Himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation. And thus at first, there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada. The Bhagavad Gita states that the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna maintains these material universes by extending His planetary expansions. That means He doesn't have to personally be involved in the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material universes. Krishna, the original personality of Godhead, in His two-handed feature, is simply enjoying, as we see on the cover of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's there enjoying with Srimati Radharani and the cowherd boys and the gopis, and Lord Chaitanya is also there with Lord Nityananda. But that is the original feature of Krishna. He doesn't have to directly be involved any more than the director of a particular company has to be involved in sweeping the floor. He's got his energies. So in the same way, the material universes are arranged by one of his planetary portions.
Planetary means?
Full.
Full onto itself. Or...
Yeah. In other words, when the planetary portion or planetary expansion is not partial, like we are also an expansion of God, but we are just parts and parcels. But when planetary portion is described, that means it's God in full. God just expands Himself as He is a duplicate. Not that a portion. Continuing in the purport. So this Purusha form is the confirmation of the same principle. The original personality of Godhead, Vasudev, or Lord Krishna, who is famous as the son of King Vasudev, or King Nanda, is full with all opulences, all potencies, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation. Part of his opulences are manifested as impersonal Brahman, and part of his opulences are manifested as Paramatma. This Purusha feature of the same personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the original Paramatma manifestation of the Lord. There are three Purusha features in the material creation. In this form, who is known as the Karano Dakashai Vishnu, is the first of the three. Another name for Karano Dakashai Vishnu is Mahavishnu. He lies down in the Karna ocean. Karna means cause. So the Karna ocean is the causal ocean. And that causal ocean is also an expansion from Himself. And while lying down in the causal ocean, then the Mahatattva is also generated. The Mahatattva means the material ingredients, Shodasha, described here, Shodasha Kalam, the 16 primary principles. They'll be described as the senses, the Mahabhuta, the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and then mind, intelligence, ego. Also there's the sense objects, sound, touch, taste, smell, etc. So these 16, and then later on it's expanded into 24, are coming from Mahavishnu. And they're all kind of grouped in this Mahatattva, which is like a big, unorganized, if you will, combination of material elements. And then there'll have to be further organization within that, as we'll read here. Continuing in the purport. The others are known as Garbho Dakashai Vishnu. And the Shiro Dakashai Vishnu, which we shall know one after another. The innumerable universes are generated from the skin holes of this Karano Dakshai Vishnu, and in each one of the universes, Lord enters as Garbo Dakshai Vishnu. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also mentioned that the material world is created at certain intervals and then again destroyed. That verse is Bhutva Bhutva Paliyate. This material energy, another place Krishna describes that Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam Hetunanena Konteya Jagat Vivari Partate. This material energy is working under my direction, and by its supervision, all the material universes are being created and annihilated again and again. So that is going on under Maya's control. It is constantly going on a larger scale, just as we have our seasons here. We have our summer, now we're in summer. Then there will be fall and winter, and it just keeps going on, revolving like this. On a larger scale, there are the millenniums, the yugas. This is Kali Yuga, then there'll be Satya Yuga, then Dvapara Yuga, then Treta Yuga, then Kali Yuga. This is going on again and again. And on a larger scale even, there are cycles of universal creation and annihilation. The material universes are created as the Lord exhales, and when He inhales, they're all destroyed. This was interesting that there's one, Carl Sagan, who's a famous scientific personality. He has a show called Cosmos, or at least he did. And in one of these shows, he was describing galaxies in the beginning, and several different theories about galaxies, how they're expanding, how the material scientists consider that galaxies are expanding, and they're giving their reasons, what they think, speculations. And then, at the end of the show, we find Mr. Sagan is in India. He's actually in India, outside a Vishnu temple, very old temple. And he said, although the scientists are just now beginning to come to the conclusion that the galaxies are expanding, that the universe is expanding. If we go back to the Vedic scriptures from India, we find that these people have known about the expanding universe for thousands of years. They've already known about this. It's all written in the Vedas that Mahavishnu exhales, all the universes come into being and they expand. Then when He inhales, they all come back within His body. And we're all living within a fraction of His breath. And His breath is so gigantic that universes are being created and annihilated just within the period of one breath. So he was appreciating how the Vedic culture is actually far more advanced than modern science, because the system is a much better system of obtaining knowledge. Rather than using our imperfect senses or creating some helping instruments by our imperfect senses, such as telescopes, etc., in order to perceive things that are billions of miles away, or in order to speculate about things which happened billions and billions of years ago, if we could hear, if we could receive the actual history from those who were there, if there was a way to get that information that has been very carefully kept and preserved, and hear from that source, that would be the best source. And that is the source that we are taking. That is called Guru Parampara, which begins from Lord Krishna, the original guru and the original person. Narayana Paro Vyakta. Even Shankaracharya, the leader of the impersonalists, admits that before there was creation in the material world, Narayan existed. And Narayan, Nara means man or living beings, and ayana, or yana, means one who is the rest. So Narayan means one who's the rest of all living entities. They all come from him, and they all go back to him. Also because he lies on the ocean, he's called Narayan. So before any material things were developed, there was Narayan. And Narayan is an expansion of Krishna. So, in this way, we can understand. Continuing with the purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also mentioned that the material world is created at certain intervals and then again destroyed. This creation and destruction is done by the Supreme Will because of the conditioned souls or the Nityabhada living beings. The Nityabhada, or the eternally conditioned souls, have the sense of individuality or ahankara, which dictates them sense enjoyment, which they are unable to have constitutionally. I'll read that again. The Nityabhada, or the eternally conditioned souls, have the sense of individuality or ahankara, which dictates them sense enjoyment, which they are unable to have constitutionally. The Nityabhada. Bhada means bound up, and Nitya means eternal. Eternally conditioned, bound, Bhada. Why eternally? Someone may ask the question. I thought we all originally came from the spiritual world. So why eternally? Well, it's not actually eternal, but because there's no way to trace out the exact date of when we became conditioned, and it's been going on since time immemorial, is taken to be Nityabhada. In other words, they've been here in this material world since beyond we can calculate, and they'll continue, because the path they're on is the path of samsara, repeated birth and death cycle. There's no way they can get out, save and except if they surrender to Krishna. And why are they here? That is also described here. Because of ahankara. They're desiring to enjoy sense gratification. They're thinking they're this material body. Whether the material body is that of a demigod or that of a human being or an animal or a plant, they're always thinking they're the body made of material elements and the mind, and they want to enjoy this material world. That is the great tragedy. Even in the Christian tradition, they also have this conception of Adam and Eve, that the original person, he was tempted by sense enjoyment. And because of that, he fell. And he had so many problems because of that. And it's even described as being sinful. The snake is also used in the Vedic culture. That this sinful, envious desire to enjoy lusty things or lusty activities is the cause of our fall down. This is described also in the Vedas, that when one wants to imitate the Lord, then he has to come to the material world. And then he becomes Nityabhada. Continuing in the purport. The Lord is the only enjoyer, and all others are enjoyed. That verse is Ekale Ishvara Krishna Ara Sabhabhritya. Ishvara means he's the only controller, the only actual Lord, and everyone else is meant to serve him. It's like we have the example of the bees, or sometimes in the ant species, they have a queen bee. And all the other bees, they go out and they get the honey and they bring it back. And they all serve the queen. Or in the ant kingdom, they all go out and work and they're serving. So it's like that. Krishna is the king of all living entities, the supreme. Param Purush, supreme personality. And everyone else is meant to serve him. But they're not unhappy by serving him. And, of course, unlike the queen bee, who can only reciprocate in a very small way with each of the individual bees, Krishna or God can reciprocate perfectly because he can expand himself unlimitedly. It's like in the rasa dance. Krishna was dancing with the gopis, but there were so many gopis and Krishna was just one. But each gopi wanted to have Krishna for herself. She was dancing, she was thinking. So Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, he expanded himself into many Krishnas. And then each Krishna was beside a gopi and she was completely satisfied. And they couldn't see that Krishna had expanded himself beside each gopi. That's his yogamaya potency. So he does that, he's able to reciprocate so that each gopi is completely satisfied. Each living entity is completely satisfied. He married 16,108 wives and he gave each one of them a palace and he stayed with each one. That is God, not like some so-called Bhagavan, bogus God, who claims to be God, but he cannot show any wonderful activities. Let him expand himself into 16,108 different forms and give palaces to each of his queens. Then we'll accept him as God. Well, Krishna did that. Well, that's why we accept Krishna. You may say, well, how do we know Krishna did that? Well, Narad Muni saw, he was there, he went to all the palaces, he saw that Krishna was simultaneously enjoying in different ways. Vyasadeva has written it. Brahma has seen it. These are great authorities. Why should we not believe them? Narad Muni, if you study Narad Muni's teachings, Narada Pancharatra, and in the Bhagavatam, you see everything he says is so sober and so perfect. So why on this one point he would exaggerate? He's a great personality. Continuing in the purport. But the eternally conditioned souls, forgetful of this constitutional position, have strong aspirations to enjoy. The chance to enjoy matter is given to the conditioned souls in the material world. And side by side, they are given the chance to understand their real constitutional position. Those fortunate living entities who catch the truth and surrender unto the lotus feet of Vasudeva after many, many births in the material world, join the eternally liberated souls and thus are allowed to enter into the kingdom of God. That means that although we may be counted in the Nityabhada group, eternally conditioned, if by good association, by associating with the liberated souls, we can also become liberated. And then we can go back to the spiritual world and associate with all the other liberated souls and engage in our eternal constitutional position there with Krishna. One can be Nityabhada, but he can become Nityamukta, become eternally liberated also. As soon as he takes to Krishna consciousness, he's actually on the Jivan Mukta Suchite. He's on the liberated platform. He no longer has to see birth and death in this material world. Continuing in the purport. After this, such fortunate living entities need not come back again within the occasional material creation. But those who cannot catch the constitutional truth are again merged into the Mahatattva at the time of the annihilation of the material creation. So the Mahatattva is something like the elements, like the female womb, so to speak. In other words, when the Lord impregnates the Mahatattva with living entities, then they get bodies and they draw those bodies from the Mahatattva. Mahatattva is the source of the material ingredients. It's giving those materials. Just like when we put seeds in the earth, the little seed, tiny seed, it draws all the ingredients it needs from the earth, Mother Earth. Therefore we say Mother Earth, because the earth is the mother. She provides the body. But where's the father? Who's the seed-giving father? Aham Vijapadapita, that is God. He's giving the seeds. he's impregnating the material energy, the Mahatattva. And then all these living entities are given their different forms. Continuing in the purport. When the creation is again set up, this Mahatattva is again let loose. This Mahatattva contains all the ingredients of the material manifestations, including the conditioned souls. Primarily, this Mahatattva is divided into 16 parts, namely the 5 gross material elements and 11 working instruments or senses. So what are those 11 senses? What are those 11 senses?
Starting with the 5, you have smell, touch, taste, hearing, seeing.
Yeah.
You have mind, intelligence.
Mind is 1. That's 6. And then the other 5, namely the arms, the legs, the... and the 5 knowledge-acquiring senses you described. So these 11, and then the 5 gross elements, that's 16. It is like the cloud in the clear sky. In the spiritual sky, the effulgence of Brahman is spread all around, and the whole system is dazzling in spiritual light. The Mahatattva is assembled in some corner of the vast, unlimited spiritual sky, and the part which is thus covered by the Mahatattva is called the material sky. In a corner of the spiritual sky, you have this cloud-like covering of the Mahatattva. That's called the material world. That's where we are. We're located somewhere in the Mahatattva. We're just a speck in the Mahatattva, which is just a small cloud-like covering in the brilliant spiritual sky. That's why we have darkness here. As soon as you go away, very high up, you find it becomes very dark, it becomes black. That's the nature of the material world, darkness. So therefore, there has to be things like the sun. There has to be at least one illuminating planet to illuminate everything. But in the spiritual world, everything is effulgent. It is dazzling light. Continuing, this part of the spiritual sky called the Mahatattva is only an insignificant portion of the whole spiritual sky. And within this Mahatattva, there are innumerable universes. All these universes are collectively produced by the Karano Dakshai Vishnu, called also the Mahavishnu, who simply throws his glance to impregnate the material sky. He impregnates the Mahatattva, so to speak, or the personified Mahatattva in the form of Maya, by glancing. He doesn't have to use his genital to impregnate. That is the difference. Angani yasya sakalendriya ritimanti pasyanti panti kalayam chiram jaganti anadachin maya sarujvala vigrahasya. The Lord has such potencies that his senses are interchangeable. He can impregnate by his eyes, and he does so by simply glancing over her. She's impregnated with unlimited living entities, and thus she becomes activated, and these living entities get their bodies. Now, those living entities, as described here, who are not able to catch up their constitutional position during this particular creation period, then at the time of dissolution, they're merged back into the Mahatattva, back into the body of Mahavishnu. But their desires are still kept intact, but they're in a dormant stage. Like it's called, Prabhupada was describing it, Supta Nyaya, something like that. The logic of sleeping. When one goes to sleep, he forgets all about his daytime activities. And then when he wakes up again, he remembers, oh, I have so many duties, I must do this, I have to do this, I have to go to the office. And when he's awake, he forgets about his dream state. And when he... Well, it's like that. Living entities who do not get out, they go back into the Mahavishnu, and when they're again given the chance to come alive, so to speak, or awake, they continue right where they left off. If they were left their bodies as fish, they get their next body as a fish. And they go right back into the fish consciousness. Now during that period, it's a dormant state. Sometimes we see that seeds of trees, they are put in the ground, and during the winter time, they don't grow at all. They just remain dormant. But as soon as spring comes, they come out. So in that way. Any questions?
This is the annihilation and the creation cycle, though. In between, there is a dormant period when everything is annihilated and brought back out of their living state into a dormant period, and then when the creation cycle begins again and they are breathed out again,
yes,
is when they resume their identity.
Right, when they're in the body of Mahavishnu, they're unconscious.
It's for the same period of time. In as it is out, train 11 trillion years.
Okay, any other points?
Same period of time in, you mean the dormancy period is as long as the period they were
yes
out in, so it's an enormous amount of time that they're gone. Then you said the Mahatattva takes, in the form of Maya, is given control of the material world. When you say given control,
Durga means superintendent of the prison.
Okay. So, of course, Maya then does not have ultimate control at all, but is doing a service.
Maya Dakshina Prakriti. She's working under the direction of Krishna. But under that direction, she's very, very powerful. That's why people like to worship Durga, because she's so powerful and she can give material benefits. Devi. Shaktas.
Tattva means
principle or truth. Mahatattva, the material principle, the great material. It's also called Brahman, this Mahatattva. But it's because of its being a perverted reflection of the spiritual nature, it is called Brahman sometimes. Krishna says, I impregnate that Brahman. So Brahman has many meanings. One of them can mean the Mahatattva, all the material elements, everything, or spirit, or ultimately Parabrahman, or the Supreme Spirit.
You said Narayana means Nara means body.
Means the living entities.
Living entity. And Narayana.
Yes, one who is a shelter.
Shelter of the living entity. Mm-hmm. And did Krishna actually incarnate on Earth in the form of Narayana, or in the material universe in the form of Narayana? Or was there an actual incarnation, not like the Trinidad? But...
Well, Narayana is his basic residence. He has different function. As described here, the three Purusha avatars, they are all three Narayan features. Mahavishnu, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and Shivadakshina. They're all expansions of Narayan. And Narayan has different planets in the Vaikunthas. So that is his residence. Although Krishna did appear sometimes in his four-handed feature when he was present, because when Krishna appears, all of his different expansions and incarnations, they appear along with him. So he may manifest them from time to time. It's like there was one incident where Ashwatthama, the son of Dronacharya, had killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, the Pandava's sons. So Arjuna vowed that he would go and bring him back and kill him. So he arrested him, brought him back, and he was going to kill him. And then there was some difference of opinion. The wife, Draupadi, she became sentimental. She said, no, don't kill him. And Yudhisthira also said, don't kill him. And Bhima said, kill him. And Krishna said to kill him. So it was difficult because Bhima was coming in and Draupadi and everyone was moving. So Krishna, he adopted four hands. He had to bring out another two hands to keep everyone in their place. Hmm. So sometimes when necessary, he would use four hands.
He also appeared behind Lord Chaitanya, appeared with Lord Chaitanya at times in the four hands.
Yes, he appeared once as six-armed creature. And when he first appeared as the son of Devaki and Vasudeva, he appeared in his four-handed feature, Narayan, with four hands.
So Narayan, if he appears in that feature, is always four-handed.
Yes, Narayan's four-handed. Sometimes he may appear with 10 arms also, generally four.
Yesterday you mentioned that two of the things that are held in Narayan's features, hands, the club, the disc, and the Shunda chakra. And the conch shell and the
lotus.
And you said that two of them are
for the devotees.
And two are for
the demons.
So the club and the disc are for
cutting down the demons. Komadiki is the name of Krishna's club or Vishnu's club. And it's got a lot of blood on it. Because he's always smashing the demons with it.
And the
Sudarshan chakra, you know, just it shaves off their heads very quickly.
And the lotus and the conchal. Now the lotus is a symbol of detachment from material things,
Benediction. He's providing the lotus flower, which is very beautiful to see, very soft, very gentle. When you see a lotus flower, you become very peaceful. So that is one side of Vishnu. For the devotees, paritranaya sadhanam. And the conch shell also is giving benedictions.
Benedictions from the conch shell because the conch shell, is there a specific...
Well, sometimes uses the conch shell to touch the devotees on the head to give benediction.
Also in the Mayavadi...
When he blows the conch shell, he also blows the conch shell. And the conch shell gives the devotees great courage and faith. But the demons become frightened. In fact, sometimes the demons' wives have miscarriages when they hear the conch shell being blown. Hmm. It's so frightening.
In the Mayavadi tradition, the lotus flower is often used in their symbology to represent detachment from the material and so forth, elevation from the material plane, that the lotus grows above the water or on the surface of the water, is not immersed in the material element, so forth. It has that connotation in the Vedic tradition also. I would imagine that goes from that.
Well, there is the analogy that like the lotus flower, pankaja. But pankaja, panka means mud, and ja, one who grows, takes birth. So, lotus flower takes its birth in mud, but is actually not touched by the mud, and is very beautiful. So, in the same way, one who lives in the material world, but is not affected by it. It's transcendental. All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Sure.